Dawn breaks in Jurassic Park. Grant is still asleep as the branches next to him start to move. The huge head of a dinosaur nibbles at his leg. Grant's eyes suddenly pop wide open and his body jerks back. Still in his arms, Leg screams. Grant quickly retracts his leg to reveal the gentle, cow-like head of a duck-billed hadrosaur. It chews on the foliage next to Grant's ankle.
It's okay. It's just a hadrosaur.
Grant tries to console Lex.
Won't hurt us. It only eats plants.
The hadrosaur is unafraid as it continues to munch on the leaves. From above, Tim hands Grant a fruit to feed to the herbivore. When Grant extends his hand, the hadrosaur sniffs at the fruit, then quickly swallows it in one quick bite. He looks to Grant expectantly for another.
He's hungry. He wants more.
Tim picks another fruit and drops it into the open mouth of the eager dinosaur. As Tim and Lex continue to feed it, Grant carefully examines the eyes, ears, teeth, and tongue of the animal. The hadrosaur doesn't seem to mind as long as it keeps being fed. Although it is much healthier than the Triceratops, it clearly has some problems in adjusting to our world. After a few moments, the squeals of young hadrosaurs are heard below.
There's a whole family down there.
The adult hadrosaur ducks its head out of the way. Tim and Lex start playfully dropping the fruit from the tree. Four baby hadrosaurs scramble after the fruit that's flying out of the tree. They squeal with delight as they chase the magical fruit falling from heaven, like a scene out of the Garden of Eden. In the control room, Wu checks a manual, pulls out cables and wires, and reorders them. Arnold is nearby, studying the large electronic map of the park.
Huh. I don't see the T-Rex anymore. He started north about 20 minutes ago, following along the edge of the lagoon, and then I lost him.
And you still can't find Grant and the kids?
Arnold punches some keys on a computer console.
No, they're still not showing up.
Could they be outside of the range of the motion sensors?
Only if they're on the river. Or in an area recently destroyed by the lava flow.
Three silhouetted figures climb a steep, misty incline, populated with strange lava protrusions. Tim discovers something familiar. Grant recognizes it too. He's seen it at the excavations in Montana. A round cone of dried mud with a dozen broken eggshells at the top. Grant crouches next to Tim.
Dr. Grant, what do you think of this?
It's a nest. No question.
I thought they couldn't lay eggs.
That's what we were told.
Lex hears a high hissing cry. She follows the sound to behind a steaming outcropping of lava rock. The cry becomes more frightened as she reaches out.
Don't be scared. I'm your friend. I can help you.
From behind the rock, Lex picks up a small, abandoned baby raptor with an injured claw. Lex pets it, and the baby begins to settle down.
It's a baby velociraptor, like the one we saw in the nursery.
The group walks along an embankment while the baby raptor chirps, moving around in a jacket strapped like a sling against Grant's chest. Grant helps Tim and Lex down from the concrete embankment. At the bottom, the baby pokes its head out of the makeshift papoose. It hears something that neither Grant or the kids can. Grant holds the baby down, trying to keep it from jumping out.
It's getting excited.
Maybe it sees its mommy.
Wait. Listen.
Emanating from a large drain pipe, they hear a faint sound. Grant peeks in, followed by Tim and Lex. The drain opens into a small underground cavern lined with roots. Grant Tim and Lex approach the darkened cavern, silhouetted against the sunlight. The sound of baby raptors becomes louder. The large head of an adult raptor pokes up and picks up in its mouth a baby raptor by the back of the neck. The baby stops squirming like a baby kitten or puppy when its mother moves it. Grant and the kids crouch down to view this family scene with two adult raptors, a baby, and several circles of eggs. Suddenly, the baby raptor Grant is holding cries out. The adult raptors freeze and turn in the direction of the cry. One stands. Grant quickly removes the baby from the sling and places him on the ground. Then he motions the children to back out of the drain. As they scurry out, the hissing of the approaching adult raptor gets louder behind them. Ellie enters the control room and approaches Arnold, who is looking at the large electronic map of the park.
How is Malcolm?
He's still sedated and resting, but he needs a doctor.
Wu is still working on getting the phones back, and we still haven't found Grant or the kids.
Ellie looks at the computer screen, which shows the total number of dinosaurs in the park, and thinks out loud.
How many dinosaurs are you tracking?
238, the total number we put out there.
So when the computer gets to 238, does it stop counting?
Yes, of course. That's all there are.
But now you're looking for Grant and the two kids, so you should be looking for a total of 241.
I'll be damned, you're right.
He punches in 241. Hammond, Muldoon, and Wu come over as the screen prints out. Total animals, 241.
So, my kids are out there.
Yeah, looks like it, sir.
You've either found Grant and the kids or three more dinosaurs.
Those are my kids. Go out and get them.
I'll go right now.
Muldoon looks at the flashing dots on the map.
Wait a minute. That's not possible.
He points to the dots.
They're 10 miles from the land cruisers.
Ellie turns to Arnold.
Ask the computer to search for more dinosaurs.
Arnold punches in the number 300. The electronic map fills with more colored dots, each an additional dinosaur.
What the hell is that?
I've asked the computer to search for additional dinosaurs.
The computer shows the number it's found so far. Total animals, 269.
What's going on?
The computer is counting the dinosaurs in the park. All the dinosaurs.
I thought that's what it always did. You're telling me there are more than we created?
The computer keeps counting. Total animals, 281.
Apparently.
How? The dinosaurs can't breed?
He looks to Wu.
Can they?
No, they're all female. They can't breed.
Then where are they coming from?
The screen prints the completed tally. Total animals, 292.
According to this, we have 292 animals in the park.
But that's impossible.
Staring through the winking lights of the glass display board, Hammond's face becomes increasingly distressed. Grant and the kids climb down a steep trail along a steaming lava flow. When they reach the bottom, they hear a strange, deep rhythmic sound. They round a bend and see the Tyrannosaur leaning up against a tree staring at them. Grant pulls the kids back, hiding behind a wide tree. Grant peeks cautiously around the tree. The Rex's eyes are open, but the head isn't moving. As if it were dead. The Rex snorts and swipes the buzzing flies around its face with a small forelimb. It's sleeping. Beyond the sleeping Rex is a small concrete bunker-type building with a dock extending out into a lagoon. It's a pumping station. Next to it is a tin shed with a sign that reads, Boat Storage. The only way to the shed is on the path past the sleeping T-Rex. Grant heads out first, then motions for the kids to follow him. As they come closer to the T-Rex, it snorts and scratches the back of its ear like a dog. Its tail shifts away, clearing the path. They all start forward again when the tail lifts lazily into the air and abruptly slaps down between Grant and Lex, isolating her. Grant quickly reaches over and plucks Lex away from the slowly encircling tail. Grant loses his balance, and they stumble back, landing next to the jaws of a dead hadrosaur. Lex gasps. Grant clasps his hand over her mouth. Terrified, they all run for the shed. Grant unlatches the shed door, handing Orange Vest to the kids.
Wait here for my signal.
Grant moves to the end of the dock, carrying a rubber cube. He steps upon a loose board. Grant silently and carefully lets it back down. Grant walks to the end of the dock and opens the rubber cube, which inflates into a raft with a hiss. Grant turns back and beckons the kids from the shed. They come out in their life preservers and move tensely down the rickety pier. Lex steps on the loose board and it slams down with a loud whack. The Rex's head jerks up, it snorts and almost awakens. It settles itself back to sleep. The kids quickly get into the raft with Grant and push off into the lagoon. The raft moves silently along the waterway, among tall, convoluted trees. Tim breathes a sigh of relief.
Na 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 na!
Lex! What are you doing?
Stupid dinosaur! Na 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 na!
Lex, shut up!
At the shore, the Rex awakens and sees the raft pulling away.
So what? Dinosaurs can't swim.
Grant furiously rows the boat behind a grouping of trees out of sight of the T-Rex.
Of course they can.
No, they can't.
All reptiles can.
Can't.
They can.
Can't.
Their argument falls silent. A surging wave rocks the raft. They look around anxiously for the Rex.
Keep quiet.
Sorry.
The water beyond the trees suddenly boils, and the Rex rises up quickly, jaws gaping. The surge of rushing water pushes the raft away. Desperately trying to get them, the Rex thrashes against nearby trees. One tree topples over, just missing the kids, but pins the raft. Grant and the kids struggle and free it just as the Rex lunges forward. Barred from following any further by the trees, the Rex roars as the raft floats away downstream into turbulent waters. Muldoon's binoculars scan across the park and along the river. There, still trapped on the side of the road, is Nedry's jeep. Muldoon lowers the binoculars and starts forward. Following in the three-toed spitter's footprints, Muldoon walks up the embankment to Nedry's jeep. He looks in the jeep, but there's no sign of Nedry. Muldoon examines the torn upholstery, then follows a trail of blood into the bushes. He finds what he's looking for and shakes his head.
Poor bastard.
In the genetics extraction lab, Ellie is bent over a microscope, examining the material taken from the sick Triceratops. Automated laboratory equipment clicks and blinks around her. She clicks on the UV light and scans the visual field where many cells are now glowing. Wu enters.
Are those the Triceratops samples?
Ellie nods.
There are a lot of ruptured cells here, not to mention the enormous variety of bacteria which is flourishing.
You think it might be something she's been eating?
No, but I'm running tests.
She gestures towards the equipment.
We should know in a few hours, but it looks like defective endoplasmic reticulum. It looks genetic.
Really?
Ellie turns to look right at Wu.
I don't think that's the only problem with the genetic makeup of your dinosaurs.
What are you suggesting?
When you made your dinosaur DNA, you were working with fragmentary pieces. Is that right?
Wu nods.
We made end-cut matches to the DNA strands, so sometimes we included DNA from a variety of birds, and sometimes reptilian DNA.
Any amphibian DNA?
Yes. Frog DNA, to be specific. What's wrong with that?
Gender transition. Actually, just plain changing sex. Some types of frogs, who were first observed to lay eggs, were later able to change into complete males.
And you think that's what's happened to the dinosaurs?
Until we have a better explanation, yes. I think that explains why the female dinosaurs are now able to breed.
With that, Ellie looks back into the microscope. At the turbulent base of an enormous waterfall, the rubber boat Grant and the kids were riding shoots up to the surface and rushes downstream. There's no sign of Grant, Tim, or Lex. Grant pops up from the water near the shore, holding Lex. Out of breath, Grant pushes Lex up onto the riverbank and looks back towards the river.
Can you see Tim?
They both look out.
Timmy!
But there's no sign of Tim.
That was so awesome.
Grant and Lex both turn to see Tim crawl, one limb at a time, over the rock behind them. He's smiling from ear to ear.
Let's do it again.
On the chaos of the electronic map in the control room, it's clear that herds of dinosaurs are out of their enclosures. Arnold looks exhausted.
The Tyrannosaurus stampeding the herbivores through the fences.
Wu looks up momentarily, then continues trying to get the phones to work. In the center of the room, Hammond is staring at his tabletop model of Jurassic Park. He gently moves a toy-sized T-Rex back into the carnivore area. Hammond speaks in his own world.
I'd like to point out to all of you that as soon as the phones are working again, my park will almost be completely back to normal. Whatever Malcolm's chaos model said was going to happen, we are going to be completely under control again.
The door opens and Muldoon enters. Hammond quickly turns to him expectantly.
I only found Nedry. Looks like he was killed by a spitter.
Grant, Tim, and Lex are crawling through a thick jungle. They enter a clearing and are finally able to walk. They've been moving through a series of large, fallen trees. Tim climbs up on one and stands to get a view of where they are.
What happened?
Grant and Lex join him. Extending into a valley beyond, they gaze down upon a wide path of deforestation, as though a giant bulldozer had gone berserk. Grant shakes his head.
The dinosaurs are too big for this island. I don't think they can survive here.
Back in the control room, Wu walks over to a console and notices something blinking on the screen. The system status box in the upper corner of one of the main computer screens is now blinking yellow. It reads, aux power low.
Why are we running on auxiliary power?
Arnold comes over to look. The box turns to flashing red, and the message now reads, aux power fail. Hammond looks up from his model, and Muldoon steps forward. Arnold is in shock. Suddenly, one after another, all of the computer and video monitors, as well as the large electronic map of the park, goes off. A moment later, all of the lights follow, plunging the room into darkness and confusion. Everyone starts yelling at once. Muldoon turns on a flashlight, and Wu searches through a printout.
When we turned the main switch off last night, we must have started back up on auxiliary power.
Then we've got to get to the maintenance building to get the systems going again.
Muldoon grabs two radios and hands one to Wu.
Be careful. That's just beyond the raptor pen.
I'll call you when we've got the power on, so you can turn the security system on again.
As Muldoon rushes past, Hammond grabs his arm.
What are you going to do with my raptors?
The real question, Dr. Hammond, is what are they going to do to us?